Hi, this is Daniel Garber, the movies for CulturalMoney.com and CIUT 89.5 FM. It's a typical day at a literacy clinic in Eastern Toronto. Three new kids are there with their parents trying to find a place for them in the complex school system. Sylvie's there with her mom, her dad is in hospital, and her four-year-old brother Johnny is hard to handle. Bing is bullied by other kids, and he questions his sexuality even as his mom works all day in a mani-pedi, and his dad's in a mental hospital. And little Laura was abandoned by her abusive mom, forcing her dad to raise her, someone who knows nothing about taking care of kids. Luckily, a kindly teacher, Ms. Hina, is there to smooth out the bumps and care for the kids even when it looks like nothing can help them. And Bing, Sylvie, and Laura become good friends. But can they overcome the obstacles in their precarious lives in a public school in Scarborough? Scarborough is a wonderful new feature-length drama that premiered at TIFF and the Real Asian Film Festivals to rave reviews and appreciative audiences. Using an ensemble cast and first-time actors, it explores life in a working-class multicultural neighborhood in Scarborough, where people struggle with poverty, homelessness, racism, and a largely indifferent social system. Based on the award-winning book by Catherine Hernandez, it's directed by Shasha Nakai and Rich Williamson. Shasha is a Toronto-based filmmaker whose work has been aired on the BBC, CBC, ZDF in Germany, and ARTE across Europe, screened at the Museum of Modern Art, been nominated for 5 Canadian Screen Awards, named TIFF's Top 10, and shortlisted for an Oscar. Film is opening on February 25th at the TIFF Bell Lightbox, and I'm very pleased to have director-producer Shasha Nakai here via Zoom to tell us more about Scarborough. Hi, Shasha.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for joining us. First, let me say Scarborough is a fantastic film, realistic, emotionally wrenching, a total tearjerker at times, but also quite tender and funny in other parts. So what drew you to this film?
So this project happened because I've known the author, Catherine Hernandez, for a very long time. We're both members of the Filipinx community here. And, you know, she was actually in my first student film about 13 years ago. And then 6 years ago, we collaborated on a dance film together. And when her novel came out, she sent my partner Rich and I a copy of the book. And she told us she wanted to work with us on adapting it. And we were a little bit taken aback because we'd never made anything at that scale before. And, you know, we didn't have access to this, you know, $10 million of funding from Telefilm Canada. But we did have access to this one program, which was the Telefilm Talent to Watch program for micro-budget features. And we agreed to apply to it together. And that's kind of how it all started.
So can you set the scene? A large part of the story takes place in a literacy clinic, but aside from Johnny and Laura, a lot of the kids in the movie weren't actually illiterate per se. So what is this center and how does it work?
So it's a literacy center, which is kind of like a before school program that the educator, Miss Hina, starts up at the school in the Galloway neighborhood. And essentially, it's the goal of the program is to encourage reading and is to provide a place for parents to connect with their kids, maybe grab some breakfast. And Ms. Hina very early on realizes that a lot of the parents coming to the center are there because there's a free breakfast. And she kind of adjusts her approach to cater to that. Hopefully that's better.
Okay. So the three main characters, Sylvie, Bing, and Laura, were wonderfully played by mainly first-time actors. So where did you find them, and what was it like to work with non-actors using a scripted drama?
This is kind of our documentary approach is one of the main reasons that Catherine wanted us to work on the film with her. a lot of our cast, we have over 60 speaking roles in the film, and a lot of our cast are first-time actors, people who've never acted before at all. All three of the kids had never been in a film before, and we cast all of these roles ourselves, my partner Rich and I. We spent about half a year just looking everywhere, going, talking to people on the street, going to children's performing arts school, talking to comedians, looking in the theater world. So we really cast a whole different, you know, it's a 60 person ensemble cast. So we found people from all kinds of places.
I was looking through your filmography before this interview, and I noticed you've worked on some major award-winning documentaries, including The World Before Her, Driving with Selvie, and League of Exotic Dancers. What interests me in these, all three of these had female directors, and all three are directors I've interviewed on this show about these films. So you're following in with some of these great directors, and now you're a great director yourself. So this is your first dramatic feature, but can you talk about what your knowledge of documentaries specifically brought, did you bring into making this film?
Yeah, thank you for noticing that. I worked at a production company called Storyline for 9 years, and I had the chance to learn from a lot of fantastic women of color directors there. I've been working in documentary for 13 years. My partner, Rich, we've also been working together for 13 years. And we really took a documentary approach to this project. And what I mean by that is kind of like a philosophy of being agile, and kind of molding ourselves to fit around the reality that already exists, versus coming in and imposing too much. So what that means is, like, on some days there would just be 5 crew members on the street, and then on some days there would be 50 crew members in a school auditorium. And you know, each individual actor had their each individual way of working, and it was kind of just like learning and adjusting as we went along, constantly.
And did actors, especially the kids, did they bring any of their own experience or emotions or style or anything into their role, or did they conform to the part they were given?
I think most of the children were really just given space to be themselves. Sometimes, you know, of course we have a script we need to follow, we have a plot that needs to happen, but they were given a lot of space to just be themselves. The two kids I would say that their real life personality is very different from the roles that they play, is Johnny, who plays the child with ASD, and also Laura. In the film, the little girl that plays Laura is so sad, and, you know, she plays that role very well, but in reality, she's like this extremely joyful child. And it's hilarious because if you watch The Rushes, you'll see that when we call cut, her face completely changes, and she just loves the act of movie making so much. And she really had a lot of fun filming this
movie. Let's talk about Laura's role, because there's a conflict in her character between Ms. Hani and her dad, Corey, who the first time he sees Ms. Hani, he bristles with, he seethes with antipathy. So can you talk about this conflict and how you portray, like in a novel, they have inner thoughts, but how do you portray it in a film without resorting to voiceovers or things like that?
Yeah. It's actually Ms. Hina.
Oh, sorry.
Runs a literacy center, and typo. Laura, you know, as a little girl, both Corey and Laura don't have many lines, but a lot is said in their facial expressions and in their body language. Laura is a child who is surviving neglect, and Miss Hina kind of provides a safe space where she's actually able to experience joy and care, and she's not really receiving those things from her parents. Corey, on the other hand, he's trying to be a dad, but unfortunately is failing. and obviously is very prejudiced against Miss Hina, who is a visibly Muslim woman who wears a hijab. And it's that tension that leads to Laura and Corey not accepting help from her. Throughout the course of the film, she realizes that a lot of the families coming to the center are in need of food, and she tries to kind of provide that to the families, but Corey in particular refuses to accept any kind of help from her.
Your film has a very huge, as you said, and diverse cast, including Ojibwe, Jamaican, Filipino, white, Vietnamese, South Asian, many, many others. So how'd you make a movie? What'd you do to avoid characters and stereotypes from these people, but while still portraying distinct cultures?
Yeah, it was, the range of representation that we have in this film is quite vast. And it really all started from the writing phase. This writing comes from a lot of lived experience. And Catherine in particular had kind of friends and colleagues be authenticity safeguards for the different kinds of identities represented. So there was that first layer of the writing. But then my partner Rich and I, we identified with certain elements of the story, but knew to humble ourselves to know that no one of us could appropriately be an authenticity measure for all of the different identities represented. So we really just built an environment in which we had people from so many different kinds of professional experience, people from so many different kinds of lived experience. And we tried to create an environment in which people could, bring their full selves to the table.
One of the first scenes in the movie was unmistakably shot in Toronto's Regent Park. Am I right?
Yes, it is. But, very interesting. How did you know?
Oh, I recognize it. I live in downtown Toronto, so I recognize it. But most of the film is set in and around Scarborough. So how did you choose places? How did you choose locations in Scarborough to film?
Well, a lot of the film and the story are inspired by lived experience and real locations. So we really just started there. We have about 15 different locations. The majority of them are in Scarborough. Sometimes for logistical reasons, we had to film elsewhere. We're in a housing crisis, so finding empty apartments in that exact specific neighborhood was challenging. But the majority of the film is shot in that exact area where the story takes place.
Finally, we just have about a minute left, but what is new and different and distinct about your film that makes it relevant to people's lives in Toronto and, frankly, around the world?
That is a very interesting question. I think what is resonating with people right now most strongly is the fact that it's a story about community and it's about the collective. And we're in a time right now when a lot of people have kind of retreated into their own pandemic household bubbles and are deeply craving community. And I think that that is part of why this film is resonating so strongly with people right now.
Well, it's a wonderful film, which I very much enjoyed, and I hope everyone gets a chance to see it. Thanks so much for talking with me.
Thanks for having me.
Sasha Nakai's award-winning feature, Scarborough, is opening at the TIFF Bell Lightbox in Toronto on February 25th. This is Daniel Garber, the Movies, each Saturday morning on CIUT 89.5 FM and on my website, culturalmining.com.